Hello, everybody. My name is Frank Diglio, and this is the My Sports Musing Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about, obviously, what happened last night with Derek Jeter and the Giants game. The Giants actually looked really good last night, a lot better than I thought they would, but we'll get to that in a few minutes. I want to start off talking about Jeter, his ridiculously... he's the only player in baseball, I think, who gets that kind of situation where you just, they're coming up third, it's their last home game, and you just know. I think every single Yankee fan knew, like as a certainty. And Yankee fans who tell you this, who like really follow the team, will tell you in 2009, there was that certainty that they were going to win the World Series no matter what. There was that same kind of certainty last night heading into the bottom of the ninth, like Jeter's getting the game-winning hit. It's happening. And as soon as the first runner got on, you knew. I normally hate bunts, and I still think competitively bunts aren't a particularly good idea, but last night I didn't have a problem with it because it was more about setting up Jeter for a chance to drive in the winning run than anything else, and he did it. And like I said, he's the only player who I think it's not a surprise even a little bit. No one is, no one's like marveling at, like no one's shocked, no one fell over their chair and in shock. It was more just excitement that it happened, that, you know, this guy who has been the one constant for many Yankee fans in the age range that I actually fall into, you know, young to mid-20s, where we grew up from kids to adults at the same time as Derek Jeter grew up from a rookie to a veteran. And it's, you know, it was really great. And I only have, I could just keep saying how great it is over and over again, because a guy, like I said, a guy like Jeter, it, normally I don't like when people say, well, it goes beyond stats, and I don't think, and I still don't think that, well, it goes beyond stats is a particularly valid argument when you're ranking players by giving them an award, like an MVP, especially in baseball. But like when Derrick Rose won the MVP and a lot of Bulls fans said he willed us to so much wins, like, no, LeBron James was just better than Rose. He deserved it. But what Jeter means to Yankees fans, it kind of, like I said, it does go beyond stats. Like I said, most Yankee fans like myself fall into that where we watched Jeter grow up with us. So we were all, you know, and he was growing up, obviously, at a different age from rookie to veteran, but he was new to, you know, baseball, and then he just came onto the scene, lit the world on fire, won Rookie of the Year, as we were growing up from kids, and it was just, it's something that it really does close the door on your childhood, because, like, he was the last vestige of being young, and it's a sad thing to see him go. As he was walking around the field yesterday, I was thinking about that home run in Game 4 of the Subway Series that he hit off a lighter on the first pitch, the flip against the A's, which is still inarguably the greatest baseball play, single greatest baseball play I've ever seen. I know a lot of Mets fans will bring up Andy Chavez's catch in the 06 NLCS in Game 7, and that was an amazing catch. And I'm not downgrading that because the Mets lost, because that's not Chavez's fault. But, I mean, the Jeter flip, it came out of nowhere, and similar to, you know, Chavez, the Yankees, I don't know how many people remember, it was 1-0, Terrence Long hit the ball down the line, the Yankees were down in that series 2-0, Musina was pitching the game of his life, the Yankees give up a run there, who knows if the A's just tack on another one, a single right after that would have drove Long in. So that was a great play by Jeter, but you think of that, you think of the dive into the stands on that July 1st night, against the Red Sox, you think of all these great things, and it just, all the memories just flushed in at once. And before last night, I was a proponent of him playing in Boston. I wanted to see him play more, you know, selfishly, 3 more times. I thought that's just kind of what Derek Jeter would do. But now, and he said, by the way, that he's going to play. He's likely going to DH Saturday and Sunday. He's not going to play in the field. He wants his last game at shortstop to be at Yankee Stadium. But selfishly, I kind of want to see him not play now. And just the last baseball memory that we can all have of Derek Jeter is getting the game-winning hit in the ninth inning at home for the Yankees. Unfortunately, not in the playoffs or in the World Series or anything like that, but still, you know, for a guy who's known so much for coming up in the biggest moments, and as Joe Torre once said about him, for a lot of guys, when they come up in these big moments, the game speeds up, and for guys like Derek Jeter, the game slows down. And I think it was evident again last night, and it's, you know, it's just incredible the way it ended. And it's you know, like I said, it's bittersweet for a couple of reasons. Like I said, the Yankees aren't in the playoffs, but it's also, and you know, Derek Jeter's he's retiring. You know, that's it. Next year, the longest tenured Yankee is going to be like, I think it's going to be like CeCe Sabathia. And, you know, CeCe Sabathia, up until the last couple of years, has been great for the Yankees. Don't get me wrong. You know, he was as big of a part of the 2009 World Series team as anybody. But he's no, you know, he doesn't have any of the same, like, cachet as Jeter, or the same, like, link to Yankees fans as Jeter. Nobody does. Like, this is, it's going to be years before a player comes along and has that same, like, link with the Yankees fans and connection as Jeter did. It's not like in the old days where it was Ruth and Gehrig, and then they retired, and then DiMaggio, and then he retired, and it was Mantle and Berra. Like, it's not going to work like that. It doesn't work like that in baseball anymore. There's too many teams. There's too many great scouts on all these teams to have it. You know, if it was going to be like that, then the Yankees would have drafted Mike Trout when he came out, but I don't know how, you know, he almost fell to the Yankees. I think three or four teams had a beat on him. The Yankees were one of them, and they were going to draft him, but the Angels took him like three or four spots ahead of them. But I'm saying, if it did work like it used to, Trout would be on the team right now, and he would just, you know, get the, Jeter would just pass him the torch, and then Trout would lead the Yankees from here on out. And who knows, maybe he will end up with the Yankees someday, but not for now, Yankees fans. We're going to have to go into next year with a team that, like most other fan bases, has hopefully a lot of good players, but there's no one special on the team like Jeter, who you just, it was just different. Like, I don't know really how else to explain it, other than, and there are fan bases, it's not like the Yankees and Jeter are the only people who have this. I'm sure the Patriots feel the same way about Tom Brady. I'm sure the Red Sox, to a certain extent, feel that way about David Ortiz. But it's just, it's like when he does well, it feels better than when anyone else on the team does well. And when he doesn't come up big in the situation, because nobody comes up big every time, you almost want to just pretend it never happened. Be like, ah, it's fine. But if anyone else, like Mark Teixeira and his 8 billion strikeouts he's had this year and all of his pop-ups, yeah, I can remember a lot of those. The Derek Jeter ground balls, you know, you almost write them off as, ah, it's fine, he'll get them next at bat, it's no big deal. But moving on, we'll talk about the Giants. The Giants last night played exceptionally well. Admittedly, I didn't watch a lot of the game as it was unfolding because I was watching the Yankees. Last night, I usually have a rule when the Giants are on, always watch the Giants, but last night I just had to watch the Yankees. It was Derek Jeter's last game. But look, the Giants have won 45-14. They've won the last two games 75-31. They have 9 turnovers forced on the season, which 9 in the last two games. And look, they got to be going. They got to be very confident. They get to play Atlanta at home. They got 10 days to prepare for that. They got to hope for a pretty crappy weather day. Atlanta's one game this year that wasn't in the Georgia Dome. They played extremely poorly, and they lost to the Cincinnati Bengals. So the Giants got to look at that and say, you know, Atlanta's beatable despite the 56 points they hung on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last Thursday. And the defense is just rolling, and so is the offense. They're both really clicking right now, and that's really all you can hope for after the first 2 weeks, where the offense looked okay in week two. And to be honest, so did the defense, but neither of them looked great. They didn't look like they look right now, where Pierre Paul is getting to the quarterback. Prince Amukamara played well. Antoine Roll is coming up with big plays, and we all know we could, because, I mean, he's one of the better players. And remember, they're doing this without Beeson, who's been one of their better players last year and was brought back this year and was thought to be a huge part of what they were trying to do defensively. And they've caused 9 turnovers in games where he hasn't played. So I think the Giants have to be pretty optimistic about it, about how they played yesterday. The only thing that you can kind of detract from it is you could say the last 2 weeks they played against Ryan Fitzpatrick and Kirk Cousins, who aren't very good. And I know a lot of people kind of like Kirk Cousins. Joe Theismann liked him over RG3 in the preseason. But Cousins is a backup. And he just is. And, like, you know, backups can look good for a game or two. But there's a reason why they don't start. Because there's a quarterback that's better than them. And if Griffin was healthy, he'd be starting. And I think last night, Mukamara said it when... He said it was this. That was great for us safeties, because whenever Cousins looked, wherever he looked, he was going, said Amukamara after the game, because the Giants had 4 picks, and you can't do that as a quarterback. You can't telegraph your passes in the NFL. They'll get you every time, and that's the only thing you can detract a little bit from the Giants, but they played exceptionally well. Coming into the game, the Redskins were giving up 65 yards a game on rushes, and the Giants, and I think the Giants as a team had 38 rushes for over 150 yards. So they were really able to do whatever they wanted. The passing game was great. Eli worked up and down the field. It's the second straight game of 70 plus completion percentage, the preseason goal that everybody laughed at. And I don't think he's gonna get the 70, but he might come a lot closer than people think. And especially in this new offense, quick step drops. And while Eli Manning, when the Giants won the 2 Super Bowls, was really good at 7-step drops, wait, find the receiver was open, the Giants had a more explosive offense then, especially the second time around with Nix and Cruz. But I think the Giants personnel-wise, look, their best receiver is Cruz, who a lot of people think of as almost like a slot receiver. He's small, he's quick, he's shifty. When you have that kind of personnel, your best kind of offense might be what they're, you know, doing now. 3-step drops out, you know, drop back out, you know, Cruz cuts. Danelle's a huge guy. He's not like a downfield tight end, though. So you get him onto these, when you see him in these favorable matchups, when he's being guarded by a tight end, I mean a linebacker or a safety, because they got a shade over towards Cruz, then that's, or sometimes even towards Randall, that's when you can hit Danelle for the passes. Like, he had 3 touchdown passes yesterday, and I think this offense is exciting, and I think it should be for Giants fans. And, you know, we'll go into next week, like I said, in Atlanta, hope for a pretty rainy day to hurt their offense. And, you know, that's it. You gotta be feeling a lot better at 2-2 than even you were last week at 1-2, and way better than you were after 0-1 and 0-2. And just think, if the Giants won that game against Arizona like they should have, they'd be 3-1. And with the Philadelphia loss this week, they could have been tied for the division lead. But, you know, you got to just deal with what's already happened and move on and try to do the best that you can when you have the games remaining. And the Giants, you know, through 12 games left, they're 2-2. They got to look at it. If they can go 8-4. Then you go 10-6. I think they have a pretty good shot at getting into the playoffs. Now 8-4 is tough to do. You know, that's a 666 winning percentage, which would be amazing for the team, but it'd be amazing for any team, really. Not amazing, but it'd be excellent for most teams. And so the Giants are going to have to really, they can't have any more games where they just come out and get blown out like they did in week 1. They have to come out strong, and the defense has to play well every game. And they've done it the last 2 weeks, and that's very encouraging. And that's all you can hope for as a Giants fan. All right, that's the show. My name is Frank Diglio. You can email the show at mysportsmusings@gmail.com. And thanks for listening.